Okay, we started back in 10, dealing with first 29 verses or so of chapter 10, dealing with God and how God was just in his dealings with mankind, including the nation of Israel. And then we moved into the, let's say 10, then 9, started 9. And then we moved into chapter, the end of chapter 9 and on into 10 and looked at how Israel must accept their responsibility for the state. It wasn't as if God had set them up. They've been adequately formed and warned, and yet they were an obstinate people. In fact, that's what we're going to pick up as we start our reading tonight. And then we'll be dealing in chapter 11 tonight. Let's pick up reading in chapter 10. It'd be better if I got in Romans instead of Matthew. I'm going to pick up in chapter 10, verse 19. It says, "But I say, surely Israel did not know, did they? First Moses says, I will make you jealous by that which is not a nation. By a nation without understanding, I will anger you. And Isaiah is very bold and says, I was found by those who did not seek me. I became manifest to those who did not ask for me. But as for Israel, he says, all the day long I have stretched out my hands to disobedient and obstinate people. I say then, God has not rejected his people, has he? May it never be, for I too am an Israelite, a descendant of Abraham of the tribe of Benjamin. God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. Or do you not know what the scripture says in the passage about Elijah, how he pleads with God against Israel? Lord, they have killed your prophets, they have torn down your altars, and I alone am left, and they are seeking my life. But what is the divine response to him? I have kept for myself 7,000 men who have not bowed the knee to Baal. In the same way, then, there has also come to the present time, come to be at the present time, a remnant according to God's gracious choice. But if it is by grace, it is no longer on the basis of works, otherwise grace is no longer grace." Paul really, he begins a line of, I suppose you'd say a line of logic, trying to deal in this latter part of this section with the Jews, and really going to culminate or stress what he's been stressing throughout, and that is justification by faith. As he does that, as you look back over what he's done so far and what he said, he raises this question in the first verse. Why would even need to raise a question? Why would this be a question based on what we've been studying so far? Has God rejected his people? Okay, this is a Wednesday.
No, God hadn't rejected them. No, you know, in fact, you know, he answers that in verse 2. God has not.
He has not. Why would they think maybe he had?
If he's opened the opportunity to the Gentiles, does that mean he's displaced one with the other, or is he just included the Gentiles as well?
And of course, Paul has been, my goodness, since the second chapter, mainly. Paul has been going over and over and over again. I use the word from time to time, hammering. That's one way I think of it, hammering the Jewish mindset. And of course, the last two chapters, he's been dealing with the Jewish nation that were not faithful people. And so it would be it's kind of a natural thing. Has God rejected us, therefore, given what they've said, or has he rejected the Israelites? And Paul says no. And he uses two bases to show that. What are they? One, Paul's, well, verse, where is it?
Himself.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Verse 1. I'll get there. Himself is a Jew, is he not? He's an Israelite, and he hasn't been rejected. He is part of the spiritual Israel we've been talking about. And then he uses another example, or highlights another proof, if you like. Why?
You mean Elijah and the remnant, you know.
Okay, he says, he has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. Now, there are two ways you might take that, I might say. He means those of the Jewish nation but a particular subset of that group. And I think it proves it, which he's trying to prove and use an example of Elijah. He calls on the case of Elijah. Of course, Elijah here, what he's quoting, as we know, was back, you know, during the time of Ahab, and Elijah is faced with the idolatry that's in the nation. And as far as he's concerned, he's the only one left. And God points out something that's not true. You're not the only one left. I have a remnant. And what was the name? What defined that remnant?
They have not bowed down to Baal.
They had been faithful to God. They had not started worshiping the idols. And so that was the measure that God used. And so he goes on makes a parallel. You read in verse 5. In the same way, then, there's also to come at the present time a remnant according to God's gracious choice. What is the... Who's this remnant that has in view?
Okay. I would say spiritual Israel, people that are saved by grace.
Yeah, there's a remnant. Just like there was a remnant then, there's a remnant now. One of which, whichever you call it, was Paul himself. There is a remnant. And a remnant is a remnant of faithful. And so, by God's gracious choice, it is, and that's really not any different than what he's been saying all along. He's been talking about the grace of God since we started. It is not that God selected out of the nation of Israel 7,000 people that he was going to save. He had not made that kind of a choice, had he? He had not said, well, I want you and you and you and you. The criteria was they had not bowed down. They were worshiping God. They had not bowed down to Baal. They were not practicing idol worship. And by analogy, the same thing is going to be true with the remnant at this time. He goes on to develop that, of course, in chapter 11. It's the remnant that will meet God's choice, the remnant that is faithful, that will accept the grace, and that grace is salvation through Christ, nothing else.
Now, it's not just fleshly descendants of Abraham.
It's the
remnant. It's the Jews who believe, right?
The extension he's making will be to those. I think specifically those Jews who will accept Christ. That's the point he's going to develop. So they'll be justified by faith. Okay. This is not new to us. He says if it's by grace, no longer on the basis of works, otherwise grace is no longer grace. So it's the same contrast we've had many times before. Salvation is not by works. You're not justified by works. What kind of works?
Works of merit.
The works of merit that will justify you, a basis for your salvation. That's the works that's in view. And one of the things you may or may not run into, verse 6, but if it's by grace, is no longer on the basis of works. That, in fact, this section right here, is one of the texts that people go to that say provides a basis for unconditional election. God's made a choice, right? For your salvation. You know, Jim, you're going to be saved because God has made a choice. And that's right. Of course, that can be said about those who follow Christ. And it's not an unconditional election. It's very conditional. But the contrast has to do with not any kind of work, of course, it has to do with works of merit, as Ron said. Okay? So then, on in verse 7. What then? What Israel is seeking is not obtained, but those who were chosen obtained it, and the rest were hardened. Just as it is written, God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes to see not, and ears to hear not, down to this very day. And David says, let their table become a snare and a trap and a stumbling block and a retribution to them. Let their eyes be darkened to see not and bend their backs forever. I say then, They did not. Let's stop right there. Let me stop there before falling. Again, this whole section deals with God's choice. You know, if we go back to chapter 9, we've been looking at this and going through as far as his choice goes. Choice of God to show mercy to the Gentiles as well as to Jews, who both of whom would be faithful. He's looked at that those two bodies submitting to righteousness. What righteousness did he submit to? Or the plan of righteousness, really. We looked at that in the latter part of chapter 9, the first part of chapter 10. Then later on in 10, down in verse 9 and 10, you know, we see the gospel being demonstrated as word of what he called the word of faith being demonstrated there. So that's what this whole context has to do with. What this whole section we've been dealing with is addressing, and that was God's choice to provide salvation, to provide mercy to both Jew and Gentile. But it was a conditional mercy. It was conditional salvation. And the impact of that was Israel sought righteousness, but the righteousness they saw was of the law, was not of faith. And he observes, if you will, that there are those who were chosen, but those who were chosen obtained it, i.e., those who responded to God's call to the plan of righteousness, to the gospel, but those who didn't, the rest, were hardened. Not new to us, is it? I mean, it's not new to Paul. Paul experienced it all the time. I did want to draw attention to something back in, talking about this chosen thing, back in 1 Peter. 1 Peter 2. It goes along, I mean, it fits in sort of deals with some of the same topic, I'll say. Chapter 2, 1 Peter, verse 7. It says, "This precious value then is for you who believe, but for those who disbelieve, the stone which the builders rejected, this became the very cornerstone, the stone of stumbling and rock of offense, for they stumbled because they are disobedient to the word, and to this doom they were also appointed. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you were once not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you receive mercy." The Jews in Christ's time stumbled. And this is what we see in 1 Peter. Stumbled over the fact that Jesus was the Messiah. They didn't accept that. Time and time again, Jesus would make the point. Paul made the point once Jesus had died, how these people continued to be hardened, continued to harden their heart. They did not listen. They did not hear. They did not understand because they chose not to. They hardened their hearts. We looked at that with Pharaoh. You know, God did things because people caused Pharaoh to harden his heart. Same thing's true with the Jews. They would not. They were. You know, remember some of the stories. Some of the cases. They were envious. The leaders in particular. They were envious of Jesus and those who were following Jesus, and so they continued to just get stuck in the mud. And it goes back to the end of chapter 10, where we read. They were all day long I've stretched out my hands to disobedient, obstinate people. And remember when Jesus came into Jerusalem and looked over Jerusalem and how he wanted to, he had compassion on them, and yet they turned their back on him. So, that was continuing. And Paul, the positive thing about this is, even though that was their state, it didn't have to stay that way, as he goes on and talks about.
This transition didn't have to be the way it was, though, because, like I said, from all the prophets and all the promises that have been handed down to them, they had had this kind of life for hundreds of years worshiping God. And it was very difficult to all of a sudden abandon that. Something that their forefathers and their forefathers before them and before, you know. But it would be much easier for the Gentiles to absorb this and to take this in, because they had been part of, you know, under the Mosaic law, and now they had a chance. So I think they just flocked to it, and so they didn't have as difficult time dealing with this as the Jews did.
So are we saying? And of course, they had their own problems, out of worship, things like that.
Yeah,
but you're right. They were very much ingrained.
Had all that religious tradition for hundreds of
which
years.
Which
to deal with.
And we just think about our situation. I mean, it is. Same could be the same thing, or very similar. We get locked into our traditions. The term we use, and you've heard used around here on a number of occasions. You know, we become Church of Christers. We're raised in the church. I mean, you can call it anything you want to. I go there, therefore. And that's not where our fellowship is. That's not where the fellowship is. That is our salvation, that fellowship with God. And our allegiance is to God. And it's only if we're faithful to God that we'll be saved, not because we're members that humble. That isn't what does it. Okay, verse 11. I say then, they did not stumble so as to fall, did they? May it never be, but by their transgression, salvation has come to the Gentiles to make them jealous. Now, if their transgression is riches for the world and their failure is riches for the Gentiles, how much more will their fulfillment be? But I am speaking to you who are Gentiles, inasmuch as I am apostle to the Gentiles, I magnify my ministry. If somehow I might move to jealousy my fellow countrymen and save some of them. For if their rejection is the reconciliation of the world, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? Question for you. Did God intend for the Jews to be lost?
No.
No. Not at all. I mean, not them any more than anybody else. As you look at 11:11, it makes this point, they did not stumble so as to fall, did they? Let me just suggest to you, if you ever read commentaries, you probably get 50 reasons, 50 ways this might be described. Let me just suggest to you that the sense of this passage is they did not stumble over Christ in order to bring about their rejection. Okay? Why did they stumble?
Because they chose to.
Because of their disobedient and obstinate heart. Their lack of faith, which you'll continue to develop.
Cross wasn't the kind of Sunday they were looking for.
No.
And I'm not sure I understand the point you're trying to make, though. What's the other way? What else would they have done? They just stumbled because they chose to. Others are arguing they stumbled.
There are arguments of trying to make this into a way of bringing, I guess you got to go through the whole thing, but a way of bringing about their total redemption, salvation of the whole nation of Israel. That's one outcome. And so as they stumble, this is starting a chain. Okay?
Okay.
Starting a chain. And another view is they did not stumble to fall. The idea being, let me think a minute if I see how I can take this right. Do I remember it right? I think it had to do with they were made to stumble, but it was not that they were made to stumble. Not they chose to. They were made to stumble. But not so they would be lost. But rather so all the things that would come about could be possible, could possibly happen. But the question is where the emphasis was.
Who did the stumbling? Who created the stumbling? Was it by their choice, or was it by God's choice? Okay, that's the
thing. Had they not stumbled, then there wouldn't be any reason for Christ?
Yeah. Okay. Look, there's just a myriad of views about what this means. People get tangled up in this. I'll try to be consistent. That's all I can tell you. And I won't guarantee I'll be that. And I think it falls. They've fallen, as you said, they fell because they didn't heed the calling. But they did stumble. And the fact that they did stumble
made a positive for the Gentiles.
Exactly. Christ was crucified. Okay? Christ was crucified. And so through their stumbling in that sense, their choice, the way that played out, Christ was crucified, and as a result, their rejection of Christ brought about the mechanism, at least, of Christ being crucified and therefore salvation being offered to mankind because of that sacrifice. Okay?
But you know, the way that I see so many of the Jews at the time of Christ and everything, you know, and to stumble so as not to fall, Christ even said, you know, you search the scriptures and by them, you know, you think that you'll be saved. There's a difference between the obstinate and I'm not going to believe this, and I don't care what you say, God, you know, that they did in the past some when they were taken, when they rebelled, even all the way back to Moses and everything, when they rebelled. But the Jews, having their preconceived ideas, maybe they stumbled because it wasn't the message that they thought it was going to be. They didn't receive the message.
Here's the point.
And so they fell and they stumbled, but it wasn't that they were looking to be the same as the obstinate as they were when they were taken into captivity.
I may not understand what you're saying, but I'm going to try this on you. Did the Jews of Christ's time have ample evidence that Jesus was the Messiah?
Yes.
Okay. And yet, what did they do?
They crucified him.
Yeah. And
because they thought that he was a blasphemer.
No, because they were an obstinate and disobedient people. They were obstinate. They were hard of hearing. They were hard of seeing. They did not understand. They were not confused. That's my point. They're not confused.
What are looking for?
Those that rejected. Reject, yeah. Sure. We need them. Okay? But by their doing that, salvation came to the Gentiles, and it was offered to the Gentiles. Now, it came to the Gentiles anyway. It was God's plan being carried out. Now, you know, go a little bit further. There's a secondary case here, or a secondary advantage of this, if you like, when it was offered to the Gentiles. What was it also intended to do?
Make the Jews jealous.
Make the Jews jealous.
Pick it up.
Yeah. And, you know, cause them to react. And Paul made that. I mean, that point had been made over in 10:19, I think. 10:19, yeah. It's been prophesied. I will make you jealous for that which is not a nation. So it had been prophesied that would come about. The advantage of that, if you look in, I say advantage, the goal of that, if you look in verse 14 in this context, if somehow I might move to jealousy my fellow countrymen and save some of them. There's where the value of the jealousy is. Okay?
So the Jews feel like they were set up because they felt that God had a higher expectation of them than Gentiles?
No, I don't know. No, I wouldn't. It's just they are God's people. Now, who's God's people? Who are God's people?
Anyone that believes.
Right.
That's truly
famous. Wait a minute. I'm God's people. I'm a Jew. Now I'm jealous.
Now, jealousy can drive you a couple different ways, positive or negative. Right. Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what verse 11 is saying then. I'm totally lost.
I'll say it in very simple terms. They did not stumble so as to fall. To say they did not
completely.
They did not stumble so as to bring about their rejection. That was not.
You mean cause and effect? Or the effect before the cause? Or the...
They did not. The purpose, the intent of their stumbling was not to make them be rejected. I don't know how else to describe it. It was not to bring about their rejection. That wasn't the reason. God didn't say, you fall, so I can bring about your rejection. I want you to sin, so I can throw you out as a sinner.
People argue that with Adam in the first sense, because God had already planned to do Jesus, you know, so.
I'm just trying to explain the text to you. So best I can.
Let's say the Jews hadn't stumbled. Christ still would have brought the Gentiles in.
Right? It doesn't. You're asking me. I'll do you what.
Oh, no, I'm not going to.
I can't deal with a hypothetical.
Well, that's right. It's hypothetical.
Can't deal with it. I don't know. God made a promise in Genesis 3:15.
Which has?
He's going to fulfill it.
Right.
And I think if I can jump to the end for a minute, verse 33, 34, 35, and 36 answers all your questions about those kinds of issues. It's a terrific four verses. But we'll get to that in a second. Let me run through this other real quick. And you go on then, their transgression is riches for the world, and their failure is riches for the Gentiles. How much more would the fulfillment be? I think the richest for the world and richest for the Gentiles basically saying the same thing. So the distinguishing characteristic being, I think, world really says those who believe, whether it's Jew or Gentile. And then he goes on and highlights specifically the Gentiles and why. Well, he tells you why, really, verse 13. I'm speaking to you who are Gentiles, since I'm an apostle of the Gentile and magnify my ministry. So I think that's the only, if there's more significance to that, I don't know what it is. And they say, how much more will their fulfillment be? And the fulfillment here, I think you get the key on that in verse 15. If the rejection is a reconciliation of the world, okay, let's jump up to 12. If transgression is riches for the world, and the failure is riches for the Gentiles, back down to 15, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? Jump back up to 12. How much more will their fulfillment be? I think all he's saying is they're one and the same. And when he talks about acceptance, what will their acceptance be but life from the dead? Their acceptance of, when he says life from the dead, what is he talking about? I mean, I don't think it's a mystery. It's the fact that they are, you know, they're outside of Christ, they are dead. By faith, they will be restored. They can be restored. They can accept Christ. They can be saved. They don't have to suffer death. Okay, now that you understand all that, let's go to 17.
It's like a stimulus package, y'all. He just runs it through so we can't really examine it.
Yeah. Well, I got a limited amount of time.
Just easy.
I got a limited amount of time.
Great job.
You know, one thing about it. Hard enough, if we all live long enough, at the end of this month, we're going to be through, no matter where we are. Okay, 17. And he goes through and describes, and I'm not going to read this whole section, and just, again, in the interest of time. He talks about these branches. Use a figure. The main thing I want to focus on is not, he doesn't say anything more about the lump, where verse 16, first piece of dough is holy, the lump is also. And if the root is holy, the branches are too, and then he develops around the branches.
do you think the Baptist is just the obedience to the gospel?
Okay, let's talk about it for a second. What?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's go to verse 33. Let's condense this. We're going to jump to 33. All right. Who are the natural and who are the unnatural branches? That's simple.
Jew
and Gentile, right?
Yeah.
What grafts them on? What ungrafts them? What takes them off?
God
does, but on what basis?
In their
faith. Faith.
Didn't have.
So either, you know, those who have faith are on, those who do not have faith are off. So you see that in this section. You can try to describe what the root is. I do not know that it is significant in this illustration. I'll tell you what I think it is, and you're at liberty to call it whatever you like. I think what he's using, because he uses this idea of natural versus unnatural, I think the root he's talking about is, it's Abraham. No, it's not Abraham. It's the faith of Abraham and the blessings that emanate from that kind of faith. It is the promise that was in Abraham, of God made to Abraham, that in Abraham all the nations would be blessed. And, you know, you call that the root, whatever you'd like to call it. It's a tough, you know, anything you'll call it, you'll run into things. You know, I don't think Christ works. God doesn't work.
It's a system of salvation.
You could call it, the closest I can get to it is the blessings that come from obedient faith, the faith of the disciples of Abraham. And the reason I say it that way is you look in verse 22, behold then the kindness, and after he talks about the branches, behold then the kindness and severity of God to those who fell severity, but to you God's kindness, if you continue in his kindness, otherwise you will be cut off. Being a branch in this tree, supported by this root, is kindness, is blessing. And so y'all can wrestle with that. It's not, I don't think it is significant to what the message is. The message is, faith brings you in relationship to this kindness of God. No faith brings about being cut off from God and the severity that goes with that. And so he can say in verse 24, if you were cut off from what is by nature a wild olive tree and were grafted contrary to nature to a cultivated olive tree, how much more would those who are the natural branches be grafted into their own olive tree? So there is a relationship here, a natural relationship, in terms of this figure Paul's looking at, going back to something associated, I think, with Abraham. That's where the natural comes from. And he says, I don't want you, brethren, to be uninformed of the mystery, so that you will not, I do not want you, brethren, to be uninformed of this mystery, so that you will not be wise in your own estimation, that a partial hardening has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles come in. And so all Israel will be saved, just as it is written, the deliverer will come from Zion, he will remove ungodliness from Jacob. This is my covenant with them, and I will take away their sins. Verse 26, New American Standard says, and so all Israel. What does New King James say?
And so all Israel.
Anybody else have anything else? It's interesting that one of the versions of New American Standard says, and thus. This word is, it's not, it is a word of manner. It is, and thus, just like the Gentiles, thus will Israel be saved. So if you're going to be, if there's going to be salvation, that salvation is by faith. Which is, guess what?
the message he's been delivering since we started this discussion. Yes.
And just like the root, God had left that in place as an out. They just had to take advantage of being reunited with the root. To me, it's the root of, like you said, faith. And now
it's kind of why I keep going back to the blessings aspect of it.
Once that root is in place, so this tap root is alive.
Yeah,
it's not dead. Like
the root supports
the branches.
So the root supports them. You don't support the root.
Exactly.
That was a point made to them.
Well, this the audience is, I mean, is he still speaking to Gentiles, not to have their arrogance turned towards the Jews that were believers and in the faith, because is there a connection there between the root being those that were of the Jewish, that were Jews that had faith, still had faith?
It's not the root, the branch. You're on one aspect of this. There was a message from Paul. Those Jews who did have faith and were part of this tree, they were not to be arrogant about that. I think there was, you've got to wonder, think about it, you put this on the other side, I've been saying he's been hammering the Jews all this time, now you're a Gentile and you say, yeah, look at me.
Yeah.
Right? And so they were not to be conceited, not to be arrogant, when the Jews were, because of their faith, grafted back into the tree, i.e. part of spiritual Israel. Okay? And they needed to be aware that they could just as easily be taken out of that tree if they were disobedient. So yes, there's a dimension of that as well. Okay?
Getting back to it, it's not them that support the root, but the root supports them.
Right. Okay, verse 28, from the standpoint of the gospel, they are enemies for your sake, but from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved for the sake of the fathers. The gifts and the calling of God are irrevocable. For just as you were once disobedient to God, and now you've been shown mercy because of their disobedience. So these also now have been disobedient, but because of the mercy shown to you, they also may now be shown mercy. For God has shut up all in disobedience, that He may show mercy to all. There are a couple of ways you can, I suppose, you can look at the enemy's aspect of this. I think the primary way to look at it is national. The Jews were enemies to the gospel, in the sense that they were no longer exclusively the chosen of God. They were also enemies, obviously, in terms of their behavior individually against the preaching of the gospel, against Jesus, going back to Jesus. But I think here what he really has in view is they are, from the standpoint of the gospel, they are enemies for your sake. In other words, they are not the chosen of God, the exclusive chosen of God. That's for your sake. However, from the standpoint of God's choice, they are beloved because of the sake of the Father. In other words, He still pulls on them because of the Father, because of what He has said. His charge was irrevocable. What He called, the calling rather, was irrevocable. And He made this promise to Abraham years and years and years ago. And it was to the Jews first and to the Gentiles. And so He was still holding to that. And what has happened is, they've been disobedient over history, but they've been shown mercy. Now these others, that is the Jews, have been disobedient. Because of the mercy shown to you, they may also be shown mercy. And so when you see that, God, you know, all men have sinned and fallen short of the grace of God. God in, I'm going to quote it if I'll mess it up. The wages of sin and death, but the free gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus. That's available to all. Right? And so he culminates in this chapter 11 with, "For God has shut up all disobedience so that he may show mercy to all." He's proved everybody to be in sin. He's shut them up in disobedience. But it's providing an opportunity to show mercy to all. The key is you have to deal with, you have to take advantage of that. And so when you look at, to me, when you look at 33 through 36, you're looking back over chapter 11, well, 9 through 11 in particular, and you see what's said about the depths of the riches of both the wisdom and knowledge of God, and how unsearchable are His judgments and unfathomable His ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Who became His counselor? Who was first given to Him that it might be paid back to Him again? For from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. To Him be glory forever and ever. Think about it for a minute. If you stand back far enough from it, in terms of what has transpired over 2,000 years of history. If you want to go back to Genesis 3, even more than that. And how God has worked out a plan that led up to this point in time. And the way that He brought on and sustained His people, the Jews, over time, and yet they turned their back on Him. And with time, Christ came, fulfilled the messianic promises that were spelled out to the Jews for years. By the actions, the events that took place, lo and behold, the gospel was available to, as God had planned, the Gentiles. And at the same time, in the course of all that, by the actions that God had planned, He had set up, if you like, a condition whereby the Jews would be encouraged in view of what was happening to the Gentiles to repent. I mean, it's just, you know, would you sit down? Would you sit down with a blank sheet of paper and draw all that out? I couldn't. So it's a, you know, it's an amazing, when you think about it, the big picture, if you like, is an amazing set of events that God worked out over all that period of time to bring them to this point in time. Okay?
Well, it kind of reminds me of a congregation here in Humble. You know, we've been here for so many years and everything, we've gotten complacent and we don't maybe take the lead we should or exert ourselves as we should. Maybe like we had in the past, we have a bunch of new people come into the congregation. From outside, nobody knows, we're not kin to anybody. And they just start teaching the classes and they start doing this. It might make us a little bit jealous or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But hey, wait a minute.
What are you going to do about it?
What's going on here? Yeah, what are we going to do about it? We're going to do positive.
Run them off or you
run them off, yeah. And that's kind of what the chief is trying to operate now.
Yeah, there's a lesson for us. Okay. Yeah, I tell you, I was going to get lesson 17 done. Y'all got it. Y'all making it tough on me.
We don't have time to start anything new.
Yes, I do. The only reason I'm here is because you keep bringing up all these questions.
3 minutes.
I get through at least the first two verses in 3 minutes. What do you got?
Well, it just seems to me that you should be able to say, it doesn't matter what the Jews did with what God gave them, it was always God's plan for both Jew and Gentile.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's right.
But you mentioned a moment ago that, well, you can't go in the hypothetical. I don't know that that's a hypothetical. It was
no.
Genesis 3:15 is neither Jew nor Gentile. It is man.
It's hypothetical, and you. What I'm saying is it's hypothetical. When you try to say what's happened, let's say it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So now it becomes hypothetical. But just
you say, what if the Jews did?
It's axiomatic.
Yeah.
Go on,
but my point is, it doesn't matter what the Jews did. I'm not taking it down a different path. I'm just saying, just throw it all out. The Jews were kind of just this little piece.
Okay, suppose the Jews had not crucified Christ.
I disagree. I think if Adam had not sinned, then God wouldn't have any need to make a plan for man's salvation. But so you take it all the way back to Adam.
The 3:15 is after he sinned.
Yes, but before our time, God had predestined. So God had already known what was going to happen, and He made a plan. So it's kind of hard to answer that question.
But
I mean,
he didn't
it is.
Make Adam sin.
And He didn't make him sin, but He knew what was going to happen. Right. So that was His plan to so that He can be glorified. So His mercy.
Okay, chapter 12. He says, "Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Therefore, it looks back to what? Therefore, is one of those look back statements.
What God has done.
Said previously. That's the same answer. Sorry?
The last couple of verses. Chapter
last
11.
Couple of verses?
Yeah.
Last 11 chapters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Think about it. What he's done. And so he says, in view of that, he says, I urge you. You know, Paul could have commanded this, couldn't he? In a sense, he does. But what does he say? I urge you. He beseech you. He's trying to exhort them in view of what they've just been exposed to and the content of that, the substance of that, not his words per se. And he charges them then by the mercies of God to do some things. Present their bodies as sacrifice. What does that mean?
Live in such a way. Present your bodies. What you do, you know.
Live by faith.
Right.
Surely was one to do.
All right. Time's up.
I went back and was reading this wonderful verse.
I'll teach you those now. Okay, we'll pick up there. 17 and 18. 17 is a short chapter and gets us into 18. So let's do 17 and 18 Sunday, Lord willing.